Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
It's the Dale and Keefe Show.
I have a huge responsibility for this team. I have to score, I have to rebound, I have to defend, make sure guys get involved, and I'm okay with that. I'm absolutely okay with that, and I also have to inspire my teammates to, be better.
Dale Arnold and Rich Keefe.
Space Jam. The Monstars.
There was Greg.
Come on, Greg!
On the WEEI Sports Radio Network.
5, 4, 3, 2...
Hour number two, Dale and Keefe, Sports Radio, WEEI. Doris Burke will join us at the bottom of the hour. She's in Cleveland for tonight's game four between the Celtics and Cavaliers. We'll talk to her about that and whether or not the Celtics can regroup after Saturday's thrashing. By the way, that cut there of you yelling at Greg, that was the most disappointed I've ever heard you at another human being.
I was a little surprised by that.
No, the surprise had nothing to do with it. You were disappointed.
He thought the Monstars were from like a completely different movie.
He said they were a football team.
Oh, that's what he thought they were. Like, I don't care. I'm not the, I can't believe you've never seen that movie guy. But he was trying to make a Monstars reference and he related it to football. It was just very, very confusing. Greg, the basketball guy. There's not a ton of basketball movies. You think, one with Michael Jordan.
You think that would be
know.
Like around his youth, too, or at least, teens, early 20s when that came out, too.
You
so
would
it should
think.
Be in his wheelhouse.
No, but he was...
Said it's from his son's book. Somebody ripped off the name Monstars and put it in a book.
Yeah, I don't like that.
You were so disappointed.
Yeah, well, I was. I was disappointed in Greg.
So we've been talking about Brady and, again, not being there. First part, now... There's a difference between today and the other parts of the off-season program. Today is the first day of what is called OTAs, which means they are on the field. It's 7-on-7, 11-on-11. This is the phase three of the off-season program.
Have you ever heard phase 1, 2, and 3 applied to this before?
Not until this year.
This seems pretty
because
new.
Because it never mattered. Everybody
phase
was always there.
Phase 3, which they're also in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, if that helps.
Thank you.
They're in phase 3.
That'll help clear it up for me. Yeah. So today's the day when, he's not there, where he's throwing footballs to, wide receivers and running backs and tight ends and beginning that connection and timing. And we've said that in the past... These things Brady has deemed to be very important. We mentioned a cut that Mike Giardi had, and this was, I guess, from June of 2013, Andy said. And this is what Brady was saying about this time of the year back then.
Good morning, but, OTAs and minicamp are a time to lay a foundation. Do you think that you guys have done a good job of that so far?
Yeah, he talks about, you think, God, it's just an OTA in the springtime and it's not that important and, all those things that probably could enter your mind. But the truth is this lays the foundation for the start of training camp. And if you have a good training camp, it usually means a good start to the season. And a good season, good start to the season leads to, good position entering the second half of the season, which leads to good play. So everything ends up having some significance to it. And you're just not out here running plays and, going through different things that aren't going to mean anything, and we're out here trying to get a lot of things accomplished.
This is not a Glenn Ordway fence sitting. This is as information has changed, I've changed my opinion of things. Apparently,
I am looking forward to his next media appearance, no matter where it is. I don't know if it's with the Scrum of Reporters, if it's on the morning show, or whatever it's going to be. To hear him, we record everything. We keep track of everything.
Andy apparently has everything.
And good job by Andy. Good job by Mike Giardi, Ryan Hannibal, all these others who are pulling these quotes from what he has said, whether it was 5 years ago, whether it was this past fall, whatever. But he has talked on the record about OTAs and how you might think out there that, hey, this isn't that important. But in reality, it sets the groundwork. And now this leads to phase four. No, that's not a thing. But this leads to the next thing. And you keep building on that to have a good year. And it's something that he's always been a part of. So I'm curious how he's going to spin that into, it's still important, but, I don't need to be there.
The truth is this lays the foundation for the start of training camp.
All right. So how are you going to do that without being there this year? how are you going to be able to lay the groundwork?
And when he does meet the media again, what's he going to say? What's his explanation?
I don't know. I don't know.
Why it was important before.
Right.
But it's not important now.
I don't know. I don't know how you spin it. You know, and maybe you bring up family. Do you go there? Because it's hard to do that. You know, that was a classic Francesa thing. You know, when you're up against it, kind of put the family out there. Be like, well, you know, I had to be home with the kid. You're like, oh, all right. Well, yeah, be home with the kid. Fair enough. That might be where he goes, or he could talk about how he's been in the league for so long and things changed. Like, I don't know. You go with that. You're like, well, you said last year was important.
I have the answers to the test now.
He did say that a year ago. So I don't need to show up for OTAs. Well, you want to share some of those answers with your teammates who are all there this week?
Maybe February 9th would have been a good time to do that, or whatever the date was.
To everybody else? Yeah, I don't know how he's going to spin it. It's going to be interesting.
Let's get back to the calls with you guys. Kevin's in New Hampshire. Hey, Kevin.
Hey, Dale. How's it going today?
Very well, thanks. How are you?
Very well. Two things. Number one, as I've been listening to the show, waiting. Good hold time today. Only 38 minutes to talk to you guys, so I appreciate that.
We do what we can.
Second time caller here. I was back on the Dale and Holly show that I participated one time before. But
it was a better show, let's be honest.
Probably took less time to get on then, though.
You know, yeah, right? I really wonder if they're just laughing at us. Because if we think that Belichick doesn't know exactly when Brady's showing up, and, you know, Brady didn't already have it decided in his head. I hear that it's best for the team and camaraderie and coming together, but I think they have a plan. I don't think any of this is a surprise to Belichick. It's just he hands it to the media for Brady to answer it. So just like what Dale was saying, you know, the media is going to be interesting to see how Brady handles it. Well, that's because Belichick's, you know, personal matters, not my thing, you know, talk to the player. You know, I don't know anything about that. Head in the sand. This becomes like him against him through the media now. It's pretty interesting.
I find it hard to believe that Brady has not spoken to Belichick about what his offseason plan was.
No, I don't think Belichick's going through the locker room being like, is Tom here?
Hey.
Like, he knows that he's not there, but my point is he can't be thrilled about it. Like, when he told him what his plan was, I'm sure he was not saying, oh, this is good. This is good for the team.
Sure. I just think, you know, I think of Allen Iverson years ago when that press conference when he missed that practice.
Yes.
He's like, it's practice, you know?
Yeah, but Allen Iverson, Allen Iverson was wrong.
Yeah, I hear you. No, totally. I'm just bringing it up, like wondering if they're sitting there laughing because they have a plan in mind as to when he's showing up, but the media's crazed now about Brady and Gronk not being there.
I do not think Belichick is sitting there laughing. That's one thing I can guarantee you.
No, but you know what? I don't think he's as upset as what you think he might be.
I don't know. Brady has said himself how Belichick is very consistent and everything is important to him, whether it's the walkthrough to OTA, minicamp, like he has said that. So wouldn't Belichick want his entire team there?
Oh, I'm sure, like Josh McDaniels said, of course we'd want everybody here.
That's what I'm saying. I can't imagine laughing, being like, oh, they think we don't know where he's going to be here. Well, no, even if they know when he's going to be back, doesn't mean he's okay with it.
Like, let's just say for the sake of argument, Brady calls Belichick up and says, hey, look, Bill, you know, I need to spend more time with my wife and my kids. I'm not going to be there for the optional stuff. I'll be there for mandatory mini camp. I'll be there then. But I'm not going to be there for those other things. If Belichick then said, Tom, it's really, really important to me and the team that you be here, would he still skip out?
Yeah. I think he had his mind made up. That's what I think. I think he was dead set on it. Because then, you know, who would you rather let down if you're Brady, Belichick or Giselle?
That's not a hard decision
for
me.
No, it's not. Nor for him. And so that's probably what he told her. He's like, all right, like I'm only going to – maybe that's one of the trade-offs. Because she's been begging him to retire for the last several years. So maybe he's saying, listen, I'll only go to the mandatory stuff.
You know what? That is a great call by you. That could be part of the – I'll call negotiations between he and Giselle.
Right.
Hey, look, I'm going to play another couple of years. But I'm not going to be there in April.
Anything that's voluntary, I'm going to skip. I have to go to the mandatory stuff because it's just that. But everything else, I'll be home. You know, whether you're doing something, whether I'm with you, whether I'm just with the kids or whatever, I'll be focused there.
And what if he told Belichick that exact same thing? Hey, listen, I've had a long talk with my wife. You know, we've decided that she's going to be okay with me playing another few years. But part of that is I'm going to be there with them as much as I can.
So I bet he's still pissed. I bet he's not going to try to talk him out of it. He's like, hey, I've known you for 20 years. You know, you're a 40-year-old. You've made up your mind. I'm not going to talk you out of it. But I now have to go through these. You know, we're running different drills out there, and we just have Hoyer and Etling. Like, that's not ideal. Like, I think he would prefer if Brady was there. I don't think he doesn't think it's the end of the world. Like, he knows, hey, all right, when it's mandatory, you'll be there. You might have to play catch up a little bit and make up for some of the time that you missed. But, you know, this is it's certainly not good for him. And then not having Gronk there as well on top of it, you know, Belichick can't be happy.
See, I also think that that's part of this social media stuff that Brady does put out, which shows him running on the beach or whatever. In other words, the message is out there, hey, I'm not just sitting around, you know.
I think
I'm working on stuff.
I think it makes it worse. Like, so you can't practice with the team in Foxborough, but you can throw the ball with the guys at UCLA, or you can run up and down on the beach.
Yeah, see, I think the point is simply, look, I am doing stuff.
Yeah,
I'm
but
just
not, with
not,
our
I'm
guys.
Not doing it there.
No, I get it. Oh, I don't think they would imagine him showing up fat and out of shape. Like, that's definitely not going to happen. But you can take the time. Now, if he goes through with the Montana trip again, which has already been reported out there, that he's going to go with Gronk and a couple other, maybe probably Edelman, a couple other guys to Montana, I don't think the team's going to love that. So you're willing to go to Montana, you're willing to go to UCLA and spend hours away from your family working on football. But when it's our team in Foxborough, you can't do that.
And let's say that Brady does communicate to Belichick what his offseason plan is. This is what I'm going to do, Bill. I'll be there on this date. You know, I'll be ready to go. Don't worry. But, you know, that's when I'm going to show up. And Bill says, I'm really not okay with that, Tom. What's he going to do? Cut him?
He's not.
Is he gonna bench him?
He's like, okay. I mean, well, they used to do one of those, like, okay, well, I guess I agree to disagree. Like, I will see you in June, or I'll see you in whenever. Like, I'm not going to go. So, yeah, I mean, he has leverage in that regard. You know, he could say, well, I'm going to show up when I can, or yeah, when I want to. What are you going to do about it?
And at that point, I don't think there's much Belichick could do or say about it.
No.
I don't think he's got as big a beef with it as you do. But if he did, what's he going to do?
Yeah, there's not really much you can do. Because, again, you don't have the Jimmy Garoppolo to hold over him. Like, you literally don't have another option that can win you games. So, like, you have one quarterback
and
you can do that.
You see this Hoyer guy?
Yeah. Well, Etling's coming along real nice, Tom. You better hurry up back to camp.
He hasn't actually thrown a pass yet to another human being.
But you know he played in the SEC?
Fills out the shorts and T-shirt
sure
really nicely in that weight room, though.
He's a nice guy. The guys like him. He's like, okay.
We will talk Celtics-Cavs. Doris Burke from ESPN and ABC will be joining us coming up next. Sports Radio, WEEI. Celtics and Cavaliers play game 4 tonight at the Q. And at this point, Doris Burke from ESPN and ABC is going to coax me off the ledge and convince me that I shouldn't be Frady scared.
Oh, and then you hung up on her.
I did not.
No,
I tried to dial it, or I tried to.
She was like, "You know what, Dale? I can't talk you off the ledge.
You know what? If that's what he's looking for, I'm out of here.
Talk to you later. If that's why you had me on, not happening. Celtics just lost by 30, so not happening. No, I'll tell you what.
We'll
get back to Doris Burke. I am not freaking out. We took a few callers early on that just all of a sudden, and Dale, you included, that think the series is completely flipped now after one game. What about the two games? What about our talk on Friday? We were riding high on Friday.
Yeah, they hadn't gotten their butts kicked in game 3 yet.
They were up 2-0. It's the same team. It's the same roster. And it maybe most importantly, it's the same head coaches on both sides.
So at the point where I was saying Doris Burke is going to coax me off the ledge and convince me I don't have to be panicked,
she was out.
I hung up on her, and now I'm panicked again. Hello, Doris. How are you?
Hi, gentlemen. I'm well, thank you. Very excited for tonight.
All right, explain to me why I shouldn't be nervous if I'm a Celtics fan based on what I saw happen Saturday night.
Well, I would be nervous for this reason if I were you.
Oh, boy.
Obviously, well, I mean, clearly an engaged team on the defensive end, the Cleveland Cavaliers, have found something that's working for them, and that's primarily Tristan Thompson's athleticism, length, switchability, the ability to attack Al Horford at the point of the Celtics attack, right? You guys know this. They run dribble handoffs as much as any NBA team in the league. They use Al in pick-and-pop circumstances. They use him as a playmaker in the open floor. In fact, that's one of their favorite things. When he can rake it off the window and get in transition and create all kinds of mismatches, that's problematic for a lot of teams. And Tristan Thompson's very up-and-down sort of scandal-plagued season with this team has now transitioned into a place where in the last couple of series he's been crucial to what they've tried to do. So they've found that. I'm curious, are there counters the Celtics can run tonight to get Al more involved? When I spoke to Brad at the half, guys, his very first point to me was Al took one shot in the first quarter. That is unacceptable, and it's on all of us. And he, you know what surprised me, Dale, was and you guys know this and have talked about it all year, sort of, you know, the level, I don't know how to describe it, I guess equanimity that Brad has in all circumstances, great plays or frustration. But for the first time, and maybe it was just my vantage point, I actually saw, you know, real frustration on his face in game three with some of the shot selection, which I thought was out of character. So I'm really fascinated. I am so fascinated to see how the Celtics respond.
Now, how tricky is it when you're interviewing coaches in between quarters? Because you can tell, like, they want to answer your question, but they also want to get back to their huddle and talk to their guys. You know, I don't know what year ESPN and ABC started doing that, but it's got to be a kind of a fine line there. Like, you have a time for a question or two, but I can't imagine the coaches are always thrilled to do it.
No, he's not. And if you ever notice, I will sometimes just ask one. Like, in the last circumstance, I'm only asking one because Brad is frustrated. The team has, you know, started about as poorly as you can. And as long as he gives me a decent response, sometimes I will actually say to a coach, hey, I'm going to only ask you one, in the hopes that they give me a good response. You try to be incredibly respectful. These are competitive men trying to do their job. You know, ESPN does this clearly, and TNT, they do all sorts of focus groups research, and clearly, and maybe not your fans, and certainly not the ones I necessarily hear from, but what I'm told from my bosses is essentially this has value to some of the viewers, and therefore we will continue it until we find something better. But yeah, sure, it's nerve-wracking for me sometimes because I don't want to be a pain, but I'd like to provide the viewer with something there.
We're talking to Doris Burke of ESPN before tonight's Celtics-Cavaliers Game 4. Doris, why does home court advantage mean so much in the NBA, more than any other sport?
Yeah, you know what surprised me as I was trying to dive deeper into the Celtics' travails on the road, and I'm thinking, okay, it's because of the two young wings, Jalen and Jason, and some of the other, you know, younger players who haven't been through the playoff rigors. But the reality is, and I'm sure you guys have discussed this already, the championship team with KG and Paul and Ray, remember the Atlanta seven-game series? They were abysmal down in Atlanta. And the fact of the matter is they win that championship based on the strength of their, for the most part, of their home court, you know, playoff performance. I will say this, you know, we sat with Jaylen Brown this morning just getting some sound from tonight's game. And I know he's a serious young man anyway, but he seemed to me to be anxious to get back on the floor and sort of make amends for what he believed was a very poor individual performance. And, you know, we asked him that question. In fact, that will be my open tonight. I hope to be able to lead to some sound where he basically, Dale says, you know, I'm not exactly sure what this is, but, and he mentions two or three things, you know, that's, you know, continuing to execute all the little things that come so naturally when you've, you know, when you're comfortable, the crowd's behind you and you want to get down into a defensive stance and be on point with all your switching, which they were not, clearly. They were not connected defensively in Game 3. There's no question. I've become so accustomed to the fast switching. One of the things the Celtics do better than any other team, in my estimation, is on mismatches, particularly down the post, when their guards start to get exposed, you will see that corner defender or that big who's on another section of the floor just communicate quickly and basically erase that mismatch before the offense can take advantage of that. And that's not something that happened a ton, I thought, in Game 3, like the on-point, quick switching, the communication. This is part of the growth of this team, too. You know, some of the best teams in NBA history were the best road teams and could, you know, walk in confidently and do what they needed to do. But it's a different deal, and I'm very curious. I really am. Because, you have to ask your question. If you want to not get nervous, Dale, think, you know, the Cavaliers haven't sustained good defense over the course of a six-month period. So are they going to replicate what they did, which was better? I won't say it was great. I'm not saying to you the Cleveland Cavaliers' defense was great, but it was better. Can they replicate it? I'm not confident of that.
Now, the Celtics have used a bunch of different starting lineups throughout the playoffs. Do you think maybe tonight is a time to make another change or roll out the same one they've had the first three games?
Boy, that's a really interesting question, and I don't know what Brad was getting at yesterday when we were all at the arena talking to him post-game, and he sort of alluded to the fact that maybe that was in the works, and certainly we have seen his willingness to switch, i.e. putting Marcus Morris in the starting lineup. There was one substitution I was really curious about, and I didn't understand it, and I'll say this to you going back to your question about what you can and can't ask a coach at the end of a quarter. The Yabusele minutes, I was taken aback, and I literally, guys, asked my producer to open the mic during a timeout to say to Jeff and Mark, is it inappropriate for me to ask this question in this setting? And both of them said yes. You know, don't ask Brad that question. So I did not. And you know what? It was explained to me at practice yesterday that there's, you know, the minutes for the Cavaliers of the front court were extended in the front court. And so there was this 2-minute stretch where they thought they needed to get Al a rest. And Yabusele, listen, you know this, like, that I won't say they're an exceptionally deep team at this point, the Celtics, right? You think about all that they've lost personnel-wise. So there's times where he's zigging and zagging, Brad, and just he has some limitations in terms of personnel. So there are questions about the starting lineup, and there are also questions about rotations. And your question sort of triggered that Yabusele thought. So another interesting aspect tonight.
Without Kyrie Irving, the Celtics on the road this year are 7-10. With Kyrie Irving, they're 22-8. You think, and you were talking about the people who aren't available, you think about what this team would look like with just that one guy.
Correct, because what does he give you that others don't? I mean, you have some of this, like Jason Tatum can create his own, Jalen can create his own. But it's interesting, I remember hearing the story about Kyrie Irving and when he was on the Cavaliers, and you know, basically Teron Lue is asking him to move the ball or something, and something about we get better shots, and Kyrie's response is something like, I can get my shot anytime I want. And that's the fact of the matter. Like, those two young guys are really good at it. Kyrie can do it at any time. And so against the best defenses, which are loading to the basketball, which are making all the appropriate switches, which have length and athleticism, it doesn't matter because Kyrie is that good. So, yeah, of course they miss him. There's no doubt.
I know only one person knows the answer to this right now, and maybe he doesn't even know for sure, but do you think LeBron James will be back in Cleveland next year?
I don't. I really don't. No.
You think L.A., do you have a guess?
That. Yeah. You know what? I don't. I think what will be interesting to me is what type of team personnel attracts him. You know, I've heard this talk about Philadelphia. But my immediate thought was, well, you certainly don't want to take the ball out of Ben Simmons' hands because then you negate his skills entirely. But I did hear something yesterday from somebody who I think is a little bit more plugged into Cleveland and LeBron than I am. And the thought was that perhaps LeBron might want to get off the basketball next year and not have so much, you know, responsibility in terms of being that point forward. I have zero idea. I almost hate to say it, and I have zero idea if it's true. I don't know. It is an interesting supposition to me that LeBron could be, you know, sort of crashing the boards on the defensive end from 15, 16 feet. Good luck checking him out. Get it off the window and pitch it to a guard who can make plays. So a circumstance either in Houston or Philadelphia. But I think wherever he chooses, you know, the fascinating aspect is, does he want off the ball? Does he think now it's time for him to relinquish some of that?
Now, let's say things go the Celtics way and we all get what we want and the Celtics win the next two and you know, they win in five games. Is it a fair question post-game, Doris, for you to ask LeBron about next year already, right in the aftermath of losing a series like this?
Well, we wouldn't, you know, the only place I could ask that question is at the post-game podium because we obviously, I will have the responsibility for, you know, presenting the Eastern Conference Championship trophy. Hmm. And so the only way I could ask that would be, and you know he's going to get the question, and you know he's going to not answer it.
Right, you know? Right, exactly.
Doris, in Philadelphia, they say trust the process. Is it a more accurate depiction of the Eastern Conference in the NBA to say the process is here in Boston right now?
Well, I think, you know, it's interesting. I heard Kevin McHale on a TNT broadcast say this. And he's not the first and he won't be the last. He said basically Danny Ainge is the best GM in sports. He didn't say the NBA. He said the best GM in professional sports. Now, I don't have a feel for football the way you guys do and hockey and all those things. But I will just say I would have incredible confidence if I was the Boston fan base and the leadership at the top. And the fact of the matter is you have assets, you have talent, and boy, I'd feel really good. It's got to be such an exciting time if you're a basketball fan. And I have many friends in New England who are such huge Celtics fans. And I thought your championship window was next year. I truly did. Even with all the pieces in place, I thought your championship year might be a year away. And how about the experience that Brown and Tatum, the kind of responsibility that has been on their shoulders, the exposure of playing already into the third week of May. I mean, this is just so invaluable and only adds to what should be incredible expectations a year from now.
Doris, last question for me. Do you think Becky Hammon will be a head coach in the NBA next year or in seasons upcoming here?
I do not think she will be a head coach in the NBA next year or perhaps not for the next several. You know, I think that there's a process to be played out here, obviously, and she's starting that process, and hopefully more women become assistants. But I do think that they're, you know, you think about somebody like Tom Thibodeau, who spent 17 years on the sideline as an assistant coach, and all of the men who have spent a decade. I don't know how long that process plays out or where they believe Becky is in that process, but I certainly don't think next year she'll be a head coach. I do appreciate the fact that Greg Popovich, and I said this on a telecast, Keith, I said, you know, when he let Becky Hammon coach that preseason game, and I did this on the air, and it's very rare for me to step away from the game, but I am a member of the staff side, right? So this stuff is important to me. And I said on the telecast that I appreciated that, one, Pop was willing to try, within the purview of his power, to push women forward. It was a preseason game he allowed her to coach. And I don't know whether he had to have a conversation with James Borrego or Ettore Messina or, you know, any of the men on his staff who are incredibly capable and have paid the dues to be a head coach in the NBA. I think he has men of such character that they probably knew what Greg's intentions were in making Becky the head coach for that preseason game. So I appreciated that, because he's trying to accelerate the process. So that's a long-winded way of saying we've got, you know, a ways to go here. That this process she's got to continue to learn and put herself in position and get more and more responsibility. That's the way it goes, right?
It is the way it goes. Doris, we love watching you work. I appreciate you taking the time to spend a few minutes with us today. Trust me, Boston will be watching tonight.
My pleasure always to visit with you, Dale.
Thanks, Doris.
Well, Keith. Take care.
Thanks, Doris.
Take care. That is Doris Burke from ESPN, who's pretty darn good at what she does.
Yes, I would say so.
Hold on a minute. No. You call us, we talk.
What?
That's how this...
Let me just put you on hold real quick. Like, okay.
I'll get back to you in just a second.
We'll wait.
Thanks for the call. No, you called us.
Very confusing.
Celtics Cavs tonight. And when I did ask Doris to coax me off the ledge, she wasn't real adamant about being able to do that.
No, you go, why shouldn't we be concerned? She goes, well, one thing I would be concerned about. I was like, hold on, don't answer it that way. I go, that's not good. No, but I mean, that's, you know, she was talking about the shots that, you know, Cleveland was making and everything else. And you're right. I mean, you're going to get a good LeBron James game. Actually, you know what? Maybe I can't say that. Game one, he was not very good. Game one, he was pretty bad in. And so actually, maybe it proves the point that if this series does go seven, you're going to get six really good LeBron games. Like, he plays well just about every single night. The fact that he gave you one stinker already in the series.
You're not going to get another one.
Probably not. But at least you made you know, the most of it. You got a win there. He had a great game in game two. Certainly statistically a great game. And they were able to win that one. And then he actually had guys knocking down shots in game three. And it was never even really a game. They got up to a huge lead early. And that was pretty much all she wrote.
I thought Doris's point that this may be a year early for the Celtics was a really good one.
Oh, it definitely is. Yeah.
I mean, especially without Hayward and Irving. I mean, nobody was predicting this. It's like people who say, I knew the Vegas Golden Knights were going to be in the Stanley Cup final. No, you didn't.
You should have bet on it.
And if you thought that the Celtics, without Gordon Hayward and Kyrie Irving, had a chance to be in the NBA Finals, I think you were probably smoking stuff.
No, nobody did. Nobody did at all. Now, there was varying degrees of how well they were going to do, but you go back to game one when they lost Gordon Hayward, we were playing the sound, the game was on TNT, Charles Barkley was saying, oh, without Hayward, done, they're going to be, you know, lucky to be a 5 or a 6 seed. And I didn't think they were going to be that bad, because you look at the rest of the Eastern Conference, you go, I still don't know if there's 5 teams better, but that was with Kyrie Irving. So if you remove him, forget it. This is much earlier. If you thought the whole team was together, you thought maybe they would need a year to sort of, you know, figure it out, and you still would have LeBron James and in the Eastern Conference. Toronto had this great regular season, but nope, it's here are the Celtics with a 2-1 lead in the conference finals without their two best players. It's pretty insane.
Now the question becomes, do the Celtics overcome what seemed to me to be road jitters again on Saturday night? Although, as Doris pointed out, they've had road jitters apparently the entire postseason so far.
There's been a good amount of road jitters.
Can they overcome that tonight? Because as she points out, the young kids really weren't that bad. Jaylen Brown shot horribly, but I mean, throughout the course of the playoffs, the kids have been okay.
Yeah, I mean, Rozier's been the one that has a big swing, home and road. You know, the first two series, you look at it, he looks like a completely different player. But I still think, you know, you go back to the Bucks series. They get smoked in game 3. They come back in game 4. They still lose, but they lose by 2. You know, that was the game that Jaylen Brown went nuts. He had 34 points in that game. Now, all of a sudden, you were up 2-0. Now it's 2-2, and then they win game 5. You know, and Doris pointed out, we brought this up during the Bucks series as well, even the team that won the title, even the team that had all the star players in Garnett, Pierce, and Allen, they had to go 7 games against the Atlanta Hawks, and they won all the home games. You know, the next round, it was all home games. And it was finally, you had to wait till the conference finals till they even won on the road. And that team won the whole thing and was a fantastic team, you know, and was healthy and had all that stuff. So I don't think they get blown out tonight. And even if they do, a lot of their guys play much differently at home, and they still would have now all of a sudden a best of 3, and they get 2 of them at home. So it's still advantage Celtics.
But do Celtics fans feel that way today?
No, probably not.
By the way, Saturday night, did Ty Lue suddenly outcoach Brad Stevens?
No, I don't think so.
I don't think so either.
I really don't think so.
By the way, it's probably accurate to say that, you know, Brad Stevens didn't necessarily coach the pants off Ty Lue in games 1 and 2. It's execution. It's how guys play. But if Doris is right, all of a sudden, you know, the emergence of Tristan Thompson is the thing that should scare you.
I did. Yeah, Thompson had, what, he had 3 offensive rebounds or whatever. It felt like more. And then it didn't even really matter. Like, then there was so much garbage time in that game, too. But I wonder if they end up changing the starting lineup. And Dorisberg, I forgot to even mention it in the first hour. How strange was that when Yabusele comes trotting his fat ass into the game in the first quarter? Like, this guy's playing right
wanted,
now?
And she wanted to ask Brad.
She should have. I want that.
And Van Gundy and Jackson are saying, no.
Don't do that. Like, why not? And then she ended up getting an answer. She said at practice the next day. But I would love to have known. I know the game wasn't going very well, but you're going to throw the white flag in already in the first quarter? Like, you don't need Yabusele. Play 6 guys, 7 guys. Maybe 7 guys who should really be playing when the game matters. I did not need to see Gershon Yabusele in the first quarter of a conference finals game. It was ridiculous.
All right, so if you're Brad Stevens,
yeah,
and you've been getting all of the accolades, deservedly so,
yes,
about, you know, you've coached this team to this stage, 2 wins away from an NBA Finals without your 2 best players, you're a genius.
Genius.
But does a genius trot out Gershon Yabusele?
I don't know. Maybe you gotta take a chance. Maybe he was hoping this was going to be the next of a long line of genius moves. So, no. Hopefully Yabusele stays on the bench throughout the game tonight. I would not be surprised, though, because Marcus Morris wasn't very good at all in Game 3. He even admitted so after the game. I wouldn't be surprised if maybe they go with Aaron Baines and go a little bit bigger, try to prevent Cleveland from, you know, dominating on the glass as much as they did. I wouldn't be surprised if they tweaked the starting lineup here tonight. Brad's shown, you know, in his time here, both this season, we saw Semi Ojeleye starting against the Bucks. We, you know, you go back to a year ago, putting Gerald Green in the starting lineup and, you know, moving around with Amir Johnson. He's made changes, you know, within a series when he feels like he has to. I wouldn't be surprised tonight. I'm glad they didn't do it before, because remember, Ty Lue changed his starting lineup in between game 1 and 2, but Marcus Morris played so well.
Well, I mean, Tristan Thompson did a good job against Horford.
He did a pretty good job, but I'm saying I'm glad he didn't react to it because he didn't need to react to it. And they ended up getting two wins out of it. But I think maybe the shine has come off that a little bit. So I would have no problem if they went with Aaron Baines tonight.
Wouldn't it be just as simple as, you know, the Celtics hitting some shots in the first quarter?
Yeah.
Because in the first quarter Saturday night, they couldn't throw the ball in the ocean from the dock.
No, I mean, 6 of 22 from 3. And that's one thing that, you know, everybody has said about the Celtics all year long. Like, the way they can hit threes and a lot of their lineups. And actually, now that Aaron Baines is even shooting threes, every guy on the floor can knock down threes. Everybody that they play, well, at least shoot them. I don't know, Marcus Smart won't always knock them down, but he's going to take them. Everybody out there is a three-point threat. So if you have that for 48 minutes, you can't make 6. Like, that's just, that's an insanely low number. And then on the flip side, Cleveland made 17 threes, you know, whether it was LeBron or J.R. Smith or Kyle Korver or even Clarkson, you know, late in the game. Like, those guys were knocking everything down.
When Brad Stevens tells Doris, we only got Al Horford one shot in the first half, and you know, that's on us. Does he mean on the coach? Or is that just on the guys who've got the ball in their hands on the floor?
Both.
Or is it on Horford for not getting in a position where they can get him the ball to shoot it?
All three. And that's what, you know, Kyle Draper and I got into an argument a couple of weeks ago, the game that Ben Simmons had went 0 for 4 against the Celtics. And he just put all that on Ben Simmons and said, Brett Brown, no big deal. Like, it's got nothing to do with Brett Brown. Well, Brad Stevens is admitting to you at halftime. He's like, Horford gets one shot. We got to do a better job. Because you can draw something up. Like, there are certain times where, you know, they're running their offense, or maybe some of it's freelance, or maybe they're just running pick and roll or whatever they're doing. But you need to put Horford in a situation to be a little bit more aggressive. Yeah, the player deserves some of the blame there, sure. But if you're this great coach, which Brad Stevens is, you can also affect what they do out there.
He wasn't exactly aggressive, Al, though, Saturday night.
No, he was not. That was not a great game for the Al Horford people.
So, in that regard, he bears some responsibility
yes.
here.
Oh, yeah, I would say
I mean, he's got to do a better job getting into shooting positions, be more aggressive with the ball. All those things we saw LeBron do, by the way.
Yeah, LeBron was pretty good.
And I'm not trying to suggest that Al Horford is like LeBron. I'm just saying, in terms of the aggression.
He is not like
getting
LeBron.
To the, no.
Nobody is.
Not so much.
Nobody
617-779-7937. Steven's on the cell phone. Hey, Steven.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Good.
What's going on?
Nope.
Yeah, go ahead.
So I was listening and hearing you guys talk about Brad Stevens and Tyronn Lue with his coaching. And I've kind of noticed, other people probably have too, whenever he has a big lead with his team or he's comfortable with his team, he always likes the team to experiment. Just like with Philly, when they have that 3-0 lead and then they lost, he seems to be tinkering with his lineup a little bit and just seems like he's trying to see what Cleveland does to his adjustments, but almost like not giving them a game, but seeing what he can do with a different lineup.
Is that how you explain the Yabusele?
Yabusele? Well, not Yabusele. That's a little bit too far. But just tinkering with his lineups and giving them a little bit, giving his team, being a little bit too creative, just to see how far he can go with it.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, that sounds, you know, sort of like LeBron going back to game one saying how he likes to, it's like a feel-out process or something like that. I think when you're up 2-0, you don't need to get cute.
No,
and I don't think that's what he's doing either.
You're trying to end this thing as quickly as you can end it.
Right. I mean, you give LeBron life, you know, and all of a sudden, if they win tonight, they're feeling a whole lot different. Again, think about the conversations we were having on Friday. You know, everybody's laughing at the Cavs. You know, they suck, and J.R. Smith's terrible, and all this other stuff.
And he was until Saturday night.
He was awful in those two games, but it's not like he forgot how to play.
By the way, after he hit that three-pointer, I think what he was saying when he was making that stupid gesture was, I can shoot.
Yeah, like, no kidding you can shoot. You shot your whole career. And now he's shrugging and walking down the court. Oh, you idiot. Don't do that. Because all I can think of was, like, the Michael Jordan against the Blazers in 92 when he was doing that, because he wasn't a three-point shooter, and he was knocking down a ton of threes, and he's shrugging, and it's, like, iconic. And now J.R. Smith's doing, like, this stupid aloof, like, well, I don't know. I made a three. Yeah, he made a three.
You know what you do need tonight? You probably need, not a fight, but almost... No.
They need to drop the gloves.
No, you need Marcus Morris to be much more aggressive defensively on
Scream
LeBron.
And Tristan Thompson's face.
I think you're going to see a little more physical aggression early on. You're going to see the Celtics much more involved physically. Cleveland's not going to like that. They're going to respond back.
That's true. Although that's definitely something that the home team feeds off of much more. You know, like if Marcus Morris or Marcus Smart takes a charge or blocks a shot or saves the ball from going out of bounds and dives into the fifth row, the home crowd feeds off that, then so does the team. Where if you do that on the road, you might not always get anything out of that.
I was following along on Twitter as I was watching the game Saturday night, and the number of Celtics fans who embarrassed themselves complaining about the officiating.
Yeah.
As though somehow that had some effect on the fact that the Celtics were getting beat by 28.
You didn't think they were getting robbed out there?
No, I didn't think they were getting robbed.
I don't know. It was pretty ticky-tack on Jaylen Brown.
Celtics fans do seem to be, you know, they have such an inferiority complex, so they probably don't want to know who the officials are for tonight's game.
Yeah, I don't think so. Why don't you just save it? I don't think we need to hear who it is. It doesn't matter, right? They all go out there and do the same job.
Eric Lewis.
Okay.
That's good.
Yeah.
Bill Kennedy.
Bill Kennedy's fine.
Scott Foster.
I'm sorry? How on earth is this guy still doing games? What are we doing
here? He's got tonight's game.
He's the cooler, too. Like, he goes in there.
I know.
You're well aware. We talked about it last time he was doing a game. Didn't we joke like he's not going to do any more games? Wrong. Here he is.
Well, he has trouble with jump balls. So, I mean,
I hated that. It was trying to show those guys up. Like, you shouldn't even do that to your dog. It's rude to your dog. You're teasing your dog if you, like, fake throw a ball. And he's doing it to two NBA players. What a clown. And so that's what you got tonight.
So that's who you're...
You don't think he's going to be swayed by the home crowd at all? Tim Donaghy's buddy, Scott Foster?
So for those folks I saw on Twitter complaining about the officiating Saturday night...
You got something tonight.
Oh, they're going to go nuts when they see this happen.
Yep, you're going up against LeBron, Scott Foster, and the rest of the Cavs. It's a tough combo.
Don't know much about Eric Lewis. Don't care.
Don't care.
Bill Kennedy, don't care.
Yeah.
I tell you, Scott Foster is the other official, and Celtics Nation goes, what?
Terrible. Now, there was a game last year. He had issues with Sean Livingston of the Warriors, and I believe he was scheduled to do one of the conference finals games with the Warriors, and then they pulled the plug on it. I think you can look up that there was like a story behind that where he should have been in the rotation. He should have been a part of that Warrior series, and they made sure that he didn't do the game. So if you have to pull a guy out of a series, how is he still allowed back in?
Yeah, short of because he's got a sprained ankle or something.
yeah, right.
Well, you've got him tonight,
Scott
Celtics
Foster.
Nation, so be prepared.
Wonderful.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.